This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If you read the movie trade papers, you know that Captain Phillips has been doing the typical American hustle with potential Oscar voters. They want to make sure that voter understands the gravity of her vote, even if her name is Philomena and she lives in Nebraska, even if that voter spent 12 years a slave. Trouble is, the Wolf of Wall Street has also been taking a full-page ad to convince voters of its pedigree as a Best Picture candidate. This happens every year in advance of the Academy Awards, the 86th edition of which is Sunday night. This year, there are 9 Best Picture nominees and a list of Tinseltown's finest, along with some newcomers in the Best Actor-Actress, Supporting Actor-Actress categories. In our jaded culture, the Academy Awards is struggling to maintain its relevance, and we're only too happy to help by inviting our trio of film critics to join us in advance of the show to predict the winners and losers. And they are back this hour. Matt Brunson, film and arts and entertainment editor and senior editor of Creative Loafing Charlotte. When do you sleep? When do you go to the movies? That's what I want to know. Welcome back. Sean O'Connell is movie content director for CinemaBlend.com and a critic for WCNC-TV, better known to many as NBC Charlotte.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. And Anne-Marie Oliva is film and theater review editor of the website she co-founded, ArtsAlaMode.com.
Hi there.
Hiya. Before we talk about the Oscars, let's spend a few minutes talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman. What a great actor. And clearly one of the great actors of his generation, and perhaps one of the most accomplished actors working in film and stage until his death earlier in February. And he won Best Actor Oscar for Truman in 2005. He was nominated 3 times for Best Supporting Actor, received 3 Tony Award nominations for his work on Broadway. You know, the media spent over a week, writing and talking about his death from heroin. Am I wrong in thinking that that's an extraordinary amount of time? Other actors have died from drugs, and they're in the paper and in the news for a day, maybe 2, and then that's it.
Well, I think we were just surprised that because of his age and because he was, for all intents and purposes, clicking on all cylinders. He was part of a major franchise in The Hunger Games, and they cast him to be part of the next 2, so he was going to play a predominant role. As you mentioned, he was still working in, you know, prestigious pictures, independent films. He was able to pick and choose his projects. He was very busy on the stage. I don't know if any of us really expected him to, you know, we didn't expect him to pass away like this. So you hear these stories of older actors who pass away. They'll get a nice obituary and maybe a day of coverage. But part of the Philip Seymour Hoffman coverage that I watched track over the course of the week, the first few days were just talking about his legacy and the amount of films that he was in. And once you started digging into that pile, it was staggering the amount of films. You just forget after a while.
I think the other reason, too, is that, you know, he'd been clean for 23 years, and then he got hooked again through prescription medicines.
Yeah.
And that's always, you know, that makes him a kind of a different twist than somebody who'd just been stringing along on drugs all the time.
And he was a remarkable actor.
Oh, incredible. And, you know, for me, it was more the human drama. Leaving 3 young children, I mean, what a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to grow up knowing this is how their father died.
Mm.
It's just awful. You know, it's almost as bad as if somebody is a suicide and you look back and you try to make sense of it. It just is such a monumental waste.
We also lost James Gandolfini this year. And when James Gandolfini, who, of course, played Tony Soprano in The Sopranos and who had just finished making a movie that did fairly well, when he died, he was heralded as a great actor and as a great person because he evidently was a very nice person. But he was not the same kind of actor as Philip Seymour Hoffman.
No, and again, I go back to just looking at the titles that Hoffman was in, and maybe we just didn't stop to, or I didn't personally stop to take a look at his body of work while we still had him. And I guess, selfishly, I just felt cheated of roughly 4 decades of more performances from him.
It was kind of like Heath Ledger.
Very much so.
Yeah, when I came up with a list of 10, you know, great performances of his, you know, usually I do this sort of thing, and it's like, oh, here's 7, let me scramble. With him, it was like, well, I'm up to 15. I'm going to have to start cutting somewhere.
Because
he had so many incredible performances.
Well, the thing, too, is he was a theater actor.
Yeah.
And usually theater actors learn to build characters, and it's much more in-depth. And, he, you know, if you look at all the good actors, or all the best actors, I should say, many of them started in theater, and they carried that over. And he just had – he could almost be anything. I mean, if you could believe him as Capote,
well,
you know.
And it was any genre, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you could put – when they put together these lists, you didn't feel bad putting Mission Impossible 3, you know, even though that's just a popcorn action film, because he was so good as the villain.
Yeah,
in it.
He was.
And so, I mean, it's whatever he took on, he treated it seriously, and so he made it his own.
Yeah, but, you know, there are a lot of theater actors who migrate to television and who migrate now to film and go back and forth, as he did. But nobody, maybe Meryl Streep, nobody builds the kind of characters that are so complete. Every character he did was so complete. There was every little nuance, tics of facial tics and vocal mannerisms and how they walk, how they carry themselves. He was a completely different person in every role.
Well, I think he was all in whatever he did.
Yeah.
And I guess it took a toll on him. I mean, who knows? I mean, we couldn't get into his mind, but he apparently was a very tortured person, and maybe that allowed him to have empathy with the characters he was playing. Yeah.
Well, let's see. Today's show is not the in memoriam section of the Oscars. It is about the Oscars, which are Sunday night. So I ask this at the top of every Oscar show, so I'll ask it again. Has this been a good year for movies in terms of quality and in terms of box office?
It's been a good year in terms of for the movies themselves. In terms of box office, some of them have done well. But if you look at the best picture nominees, some of them have not done very well at all.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a
– how do you explain that? And like one of the best picture nominees is at the Manor Theater. No, that, no, that
a slight. How dare they? No, but I will. There is a surprising amount of box office leaders in the Best Picture race this year, and it's probably because we have nine. But
yeah,
films
that's helped.
Gravity is obviously doing extremely well. Wolf of Wall Street is now Martin Scorsese's highest grossing film of all time. American Hustle just passed $200 million worldwide. You know, we went through a stage a while back where we had five Best Picture nominees, and it was things like Frost Nixon and The Reader, and I don't think any of them broke like $30 million.
On the other hand, Nebraska's only made about $15 million.
Right.
Dallas Buyers Club, 24.
Oh, that's a shame.
What else?
But with nine, there is going to be a wide range, which is great. I mean, I think you should have blockbusters and small indie films, you know, rubbing shoulder to shoulder, because they all have a stake in the best pictures of the year.
Would you say that these are the best picture nominees? Are these the right the right pictures to be in that category?
We're always going to differ on that, because like Inside Llewyn Davis is my favorite movie of last year, and that's nowhere to be seen among these nine. But I mean, overall, with a minor quibble here and there, it's not like there's any.
So does that mean they're wrong, or does it mean that it's
yeah, they're wrong.
Does it mean that it's a political event more than it is a an honest assessment of what should be in that category and what should win?
Well, it's just you put the word best on anything. It's kind of ridiculous.
It's very subjective.
Mm-hmm. Right, of course. And it's all about how things get campaigned, and it's all about, you know, what majority goes after.
How many
different
rings
nominees
you kiss, and are they the right ones to kiss?
Yeah. Right. I also find it very funny since we've increased this category to nine, you're increasing the number of films that just don't have a chance to win. Like, we're going to get into these other films, like Philomena and Nebraska and even something like Captain Phillips. They're good films, but they just don't feel like they have a chance at all right
so
now.
What about the worst pictures of the year?
Where do we begin?
Give me a couple of films that you think were the worst of the year.
That's easy. I got that list in my mind. Like movie 43, which had this all-star cast, and it was just an embarrassment for everybody concerned, and A Good Day to Die Hard, which is a rancid sequel to a once great franchise.
Yeah.
Those are two off the top of my head.
Tune into the Razzies, which are the night before the Oscars, where I think Adam Sandler will sweep every category. Grown-ups,
too. Well he should.
Yes, as well he should.
He's the luckiest man in show business.
He's the Meryl Streep, as you have said, the Meryl Streep of the Razzies.
Yes, he is.
Is that something that he can take pride in? I'm serious about that. That's a serious question.
If he wants to. Oh, he's laughing all the way to the
people
bank.
People have collected their awards there, like Halle Berry when she won for Catwoman. She showed up and took her honor. And so did Sandra Bullock the year she won. Mm-hmm. Of course, she was winning the Oscar that same year, so yes. She could afford to be great.
You have to keep your sense of humor, I'm sure.
So the nominees for Best Picture are American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Nebraska, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street, which I worked into the opening of this program very uncleverly, I might point out. Any film missing from that list aside from Lewin?
Inside Lewin Davis?
Inside Lewin Davis.
That's a good question.
Well, there are personal ones. Like I know Sean and I really like Stoker, but that movie never had a chance. It came out early in the year. Didn't make any money. Kind of faded.
Is that about Bram Stoker? What was it about?
No, it was kind of a little – kind of a Shadow of a Doubt type movie. It was really moody, really well done.
Find it on your own, please. Yeah. Rent it and find it. It's really worth seeing. Right. There were films like Saving Mr. Banks, which I thought – Just on paper.
I thought it was delightful.
Well, on paper, it looked like it was going to contend.
Yeah.
You know, you had Emma Thompson and Tom Hanks, and they were telling a Walt Disney story. I really enjoyed it. It made my top 10 for the year, but it didn't connect with other people in nearly the same way. I thought Robert Redford's film, All Is Lost, had a chance of getting in.
Yeah.
The fact that it was shut out.
I thought that one was very intense and one of his, maybe his best performance.
So it speaks to the year that there were really films that we could point at and say, I'm a little bit – Lewin Davis especially. I'm really surprised it didn't get in, and yet we still have 9 Best Picture nominees. So,
and Matt, you've called this list of the Best Picture nominees predictable. How so?
Well, again, there aren't any real surprises. I mean, when we all came up with our list for Oscar pools or whatever of what will be nominated, all these movies were on there. And then for that 10th slot, since they could nominate up to 10, you know, most of us had either Saving Mr. Banks or Inside Llewyn Davis. So there weren't any films on here that you were like, oh, wow, I cannot believe that got nominated.
But you added that because it's predictable, the Oscar race would prove to be wholly unpredictable.
That's true. There are certain categories.
That's kind of perverse.
Yeah, it's a real paradox. You know, I like to keep the readers guessing or think I'm drunk, whichever. But no, it's true. Because of that, there are some categories, we'll go into that later, I'm sure, that you really don't have a clear front runner on.
You know, as I look through the list of nominees, what struck me, and I don't know whether this is unusual or not, you tell me, is that all the films are aimed at adults. They are not bang, bang, shoot 'em up, car chase, Transformer, 13-year-old movies. They're all adult, and by adult I don't mean sexual. I just mean intelligent films.
This isn't the MTV Movie Awards. Mike. This is the, Oscars.
Is that always the case in the Oscars?
Sure. Yeah. Really? That's why something like The Dark Knight gets left out when, you know, arguably that year, even grown-ups were saying that was one of the better films, the best films of the year. You know, sometimes you get something like a Toy Story 3 that contends. But even at that, I think that appeals more towards adults who are bringing their kids to theaters. And it's a work of art by Pixar. But for the most part, yeah, they're going to be sort of more adult grown-up.
Well,
you're not going to see Twilight get in.
The standard is higher, too, for the Oscars. They want to have movies that really, mean something, have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to get probably the more serious.
So what does it mean if these adult films are not packing them in at the box office? Because they're all good movies.
Well, for instance, take Nebraska.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
We can talk about it.
Okay.
But do it quickly because we have 30 seconds.
Okay. It's a downer. And I think maybe that's the reason people don't want to see it.
We'll come through. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about each of these Best Picture nominees individually, and then the categories, Best Actor, Actress, et cetera, et cetera, and get your take on all these films, what will win, what should win, because I know that there's sometimes a difference in your opinion between that as we talk to Sean O'Connell, Matt Brunson, and Anne-Marie Oliva, our triple crown of of movie critics here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Charlotte Area Transit System. Public transit benefits more than just commuters. It creates jobs through private development, which generates tax revenues for schools, roads, and more. Details at ridetransit.org. Coming up Monday on Charlotte Talks, it's the history of North Carolina politics. In just a few short years, North Carolina went from being a conservative rural state to one that leapfrogged its southern neighbors with progressive approaches to education, race relations, growth, and the economy. We're in the middle of a politically driven course correction, but in fact, this entire journey has been driven by politics. Tom Amon explains that journey in his book, Southern Democracy, and he shares some details with us when Charlotte Talks, Monday at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. And we'll get back to our Oscar conversation in just a moment.
On the next Di and Reem Show, the Friday News Roundup. A new Pentagon budget scales back the Army to pre-World War II levels. The Arizona governor vetoes a controversial anti-gay bill. And John Dingell, the longest-serving member of Congress, announces his retirement.
Join the News Roundup on the Di and Reem Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking to our three movie critics about the Oscars, which are Sunday night on
ABC.
ABC? Is it ABC?
Correct. Hosted well, by you. Ellen DeGeneres.
I'll know where to look now.
Save us, Ellen. Please save us.
Sean O'Connell is here from WCNC-TV and CinemaBlend.com. Matt Brunson from Creative Loathing. Anne-Marie Oliva from ArtsAlamo.com. I want to scatter into our conversation about these Best Picture nominees. There are nine of them, and we'll go through them alphabetically. And I don't want you to tell me as we talk about them where you think – how they'll do on Sunday night. Just tell me about the films. And let's start with American Hustle because that's A. A for American Hustle. the film's pros and cons and how it made the Best Picture category.
This is a good one to start with.
Okay.
Because Matt and I disagree wholeheartedly. Henry, I don't know where you fall on this.
I'm kind of in the middle.
Kind of in the middle?
Between the two
okay.
of you.
You go first because it's a Best Picture nominee.
Yeah.
So.
Next to Llewyn Davis, it was my favorite of the year. I think it's a lot of fun. David O. Russell's on a really huge winning streak after The Fighter and Silver Linings Playbook. I think this is actually the best of the three. I don't think it would be faulted in terms of its performances. I think they're wonderful. And it's got a witty script. To me, it was just a great movie experience.
And you don't like it.
I totally disagree. And it feels like we sat through completely different movies. But I'm in the minority on it for sure because the overwhelming voice on it is that it is one of David Russell's best works and that all of the performances seem to click. It always just felt like a mess to me. Like I made it about 30 minutes into it before it started falling apart and it never regained its ground for me. So it just – I couldn't get into it and each decision that it made I felt – was more wrong than the one before it. And then so when I came out with this opinion of it, everyone's like, oh, you hate David O. Russell. But it's not at all. Like Silver Linings Playbook was in my top three last year. The Fighter was on my top 10. I like what he does. I really just think he whiffed with this one. It felt like him trying to do Scorsese's Goodfellas and just not getting near it at all.
So Anne-Marie, this all comes down to you. It all rests on you.
All righty. I'm up to it. Well, you know, for me, it was a lot of fun, as Matt said. But it is a little bit messy. But the whole point of it is it's a hustle. Everybody hustles everybody. The movie is called American Hustle. We Americans are very good at hustling each other and everybody else. So that's what I took away from it. I think the performances
is
are
– Is the movie itself a hustle?
I believe it is. I think it's almost like
the Sting.
Like the Sting. Yeah, I think it's kind of – it's not as good as the Sting, though.
No. Well, see, I argue that a story like that, if it's a hustle, if it's a con job, it should be airtight. And I don't think you can call this movie airtight.
Yeah, but we have to remember that Sean is also jealous of Bradley Cooper's hairstyle in that movie. That plays a lot into his opinion.
It was the first time I honestly felt Jennifer Lawrence was miscast. And I think she's normally good in anything, and I just did not enjoy her in this.
You know, there are nine Best Picture nominees. There used to be five. Didn't they expand it to 10 or as many as 10?
It has been as many as 10.
Yeah. So who makes the decision that we're going to cut it off at 9 or 8 next year or whatever?
The voting is complicated because it's weighted, right? Matt.
Yeah, I mean, once they started, they switched from 5 to 10, just a solid 10, which was a great idea. I thought that was good, but they only did a couple years. Then they decided to do a weighted ballot where it could be up to 10, and since then we've had 9 all 3 years they've done that. It's like a certain they said they did a model when they used to have five nominees and saw what a cutoff number was. Now what that is, we don't know.
And, but you disagree with Matt here again, Sean, because you think the number ought to be three.
I would love for it to be three. I think increasing the number is kind of silly because you're dividing the vote in too many different ways. And if the race this year were Gravity, 12 Years a Slave, and American Hustle, I would love to see those three just go at
it. On the other
hand, why not focus it?
But on the other hand, you're giving acknowledgement to good work. And I mean, you know, who doesn't want to be acknowledged and recognized?
I would understand that if the Academy Awards were just the only dog in town. But there are so many awards leading up to it that, you know, if something gets a Screen Actors Guild Award or a Golden Globe, it almost feels like it's as much of a recognition.
It's still the big one. The Oscar is still the big one.
His point is that reducing the number of nominees for Best Picture to three would make it even more exclusive, even more special.
I think so.
Three sounds a little slim to me, but I think it should never have been changed from five. Okay. I think five was perfect.
Did they do it for TV? Did they do it for ratings? Did they do it because it helps box office?
They did it all for money. I mean, they want nine films buying For Your Consideration campaign ads in the trades and buying the commercials.
Well, it's also because they got such a harsh criticism of the Dark Knight missing out on its slot. But the thing is, with the way they have it rigged now, popular movies like that still may not rise to the top. So they kind of defeated
themselves.
Well,
you know, there's so much at stake in the Oscar race. I think that's another reason that they raised it. And, you know, I don't have a problem with having more nominations. I always think I would like to think the cream rises to the top. Although I always, if I'm going to disagree with anything, it's usually the best picture that wins.
Well, and there are always years where it looks like there are two that don't belong. They just don't deserve. They shouldn't be in that category. Mm. So this year, I wouldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
This year was very strong.
But does a nomination for best picture increase attendance? And is that why they would want to push for 9 or 10 nominees, because that means 9 or 10 of five more films than the original five are going to get more box office?
It's not guaranteed, but yeah, a lot of times it does help, especially if you rack up the nominations. I mean, if it's like nominated for 2 Oscars, maybe not. Nominated for 10, that looks pretty impressive.
Silver Linings Playbook played a long time. It wasn't making a lot of money. And then after the Oscars, it really picked up. People's, you know, oh, I don't want to see a movie about a, you know, mentally ill guy.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there was much more to it than that. And it really, it hung in there and hung in there, and it kept playing and playing, and finally it reached over 100 million. So
you're also talking about a small slice of the audience. Like, the Iron Man crowd's never going to check out Philomena. It doesn't matter what it says on the poster.
Yeah.
Does the Academy Award, winning the Academy Award, or even being nominated, mean more elsewhere in the world than it does here, given the fact that we have all these different awards on television, the People's Choice Awards, the Golden Globe Awards, the SAG Awards, blah, blah, blah?
Oh, yeah.
When you go to get financing for a film, you know, it I guess it matters what it's been nominated for, how many times it's won something. Hollywood is still trying to figure out what is a winner, what's going to be a winner. And if somebody has experience in a movie that has won awards, especially the Oscar, it gives them some weight when they go and ask for money to make their films. So I think for that, it's important. Like I said, there's a lot at stake, and that's why it's important. The Oscars are important.
So let's talk about the next Best Picture nominee alphabetically, Captain Phillips. This film was monstrously difficult, evidently, to shoot because it was shot on a freighter in the middle of the open seas, which made it very difficult. Is that why it's on the list, or are there other reasons that it's on the list?
I mean, I think the reasons that it's on the list is, it's funny. I went back and watched just recently Scorsese winning his Oscar for The Departed. And when they announced the other guys he was competing against, you just saw a lot of the same familiar faces. Paul Greengrass was there at that point. So you get – it's the factors of it. You get Paul Greengrass and Tom Hanks, and they're telling a based on a true story. It almost just – it's like the Academy's checklist, you know? Bing, we got Tom Hanks. Bing, we got a director who we've recognized in the past. And we have and they did a good job of telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
Would I have put it on the list? No, I wouldn't have.
Well, you said it has no shot to win.
Oh, I don't think it has a shot
to win.
And again, that's the problem of us having 9 nominees. I just think that there are at least 3 others that can call themselves
frontrunners. But Tom Hanks. Is Tom Hanks' Day in the Sun over?
No, not
over, but it was a shock that he didn't get nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what everybody expected. But it's fine, you know. I mean, he's got plenty of nominations. I didn't think it was one of the 5 best of the year in that category, so
here's
I'm not crying.
What really hurt about Captain Phillips for me is that you saw – if anyone followed that story as it was happening, it's still very fresh in everyone's mind. And then leading into the movie, we saw all these photos of Tom Hanks like posing with the actual man who the movie is based on.
Right.
So to me, that ripped all the suspense out of this supposedly suspenseful film of, is this guy going to survive this ordeal?
So it was too soon to make the film.
It was too soon to make the film, and the way that they marketed it was, here's Tom Hanks and the guy. And then the whole movie the whole time is asking, is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? How is he going to survive? And so I wasn't vested.
Yeah, but we
in
knew
it.
The outcome of, what was the Apollo movie?
Titanic. We knew the outcome.
You knew the outcome of Titanic, too. So what's the difference?
Because in a movie like Titanic, they chose to focus on two people we didn't know about. It wasn't the story of the ship's captain. It was a story about these two imaginary people who we got invested in their story. If you're calling it Captain Phillips and the movie is asking the inherent question, does Captain Phillips live? And you advertise it with a picture of him waving after the fact.
So note to Hollywood.
Your movie's flawed.
Note to Hollywood, no movie called Sully.
Make a movie about the goose.
What is your take on it?
Well, I thought it was interesting because I didn't know much about Somali pirates. And, you know, you get to see where they're coming from. You get to see where they're starting from and how much, you know, this is life and death for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was interesting from that point of view. I didn't think it was, you know, I don't think it has a shot to win.
Okay.
And I think for Tom Hanks, the last few minutes are very moving. But, you know, it's okay.
Nominees for performance by an actress in a supporting role. I sound like somebody announcing that. are Sally Hawking for Blue Jasmine, Jennifer Lawrence in American Hustle, Lupita Nyong'o, is that how you say her name?
Mm-hmm.
In 12 Years of a Slave, Julia Roberts in August, Osage County, and June Squibb in Nebraska. All of you say, and here we're going to pick winners. All of you say the prize should go to Lupita Nyong'o from 12 Years a Slave. Why?
She gives an amazing performance, first and foremost. She doesn't get a lot of screen time, but she owns every single
minute
she has.
She played was?
Patsy, who is a slave on the plantation, the second plantation that Chiwetel Ejiofor's character lands on. Mm-hmm. And the plantation's run by Michael Fassbender's character, and Patsy is his favorite slave. She picks the most amount of cotton. She's way ahead of everybody else in terms of the labor that she produces. And it hints that there's a romantic angle?
Oh, no, he's lusty for her.
Definitely
not with
him. But it's a really complicated part, and I think she's outstanding in it.
Very complex. And, you know, something that I was thinking about when I watched this, as bad as things were for the males, I mean, imagine being a female and being raped whenever somebody wants to, having your children taken away from you. I mean, it's just horrifying. And I just thought she did a really amazing job.
Yeah, and that's a part of it is that, you feel for him, obviously. But her character, you know, I don't want to give spoilers, but, you know, we know what happens to him because of the title.
He gets out.
But, you know.
She doesn't.
No, yeah. And it's just heartbreaking.
So you think she should win. Who will win?
That's interesting because the tide seems to be turning a little bit. If you – no, you disagree. It feels like Jennifer Lawrence is starting to get some momentum.
I agree. It's
she won the BAFTA just recently.
Right.
She's obviously Hollywood's it girl right now and deserve it. She's very talented. But
I think she's fun in the part. I mean, the thing that's about her is that she's always in the moment. And you just – I mean, she's just adorable. I mean, but I really think in terms of who should win, it should be Lupita Nyong'o.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she will win. I think she'll – overcome the Jennifer Lawrence juggernaut.
And Jennifer Lawrence just won.
Yeah,
that's right. Give somebody else a chance.
Right.
Dallas Buyers Club is the next alphabetically on the list of Best Picture nominees. This does not seem like typical Hollywood fare. This seems more like an HBO series. And by the way, he's in an HBO series right now, Matthew McConaughey is. And it also seems more like an independent film than a big Hollywood production. Is this on the list because of Matthew McConaughey, who he is, who he's been, and the performance he gives in this movie. And the fact that he lost all this weight to make the film, which is something that Hollywood seems to really like.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's on the list because McConaughey, you know, drew attention to the film. But I think once people started watching the movie, they realized that it's great in its own right and deserves to be on that Best Picture.
It's one of those that kept doing better all throughout the season than everybody thought. They thought it'd just be Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's up for 6 Oscars.
And you have said, Matt, that this nomination of Dallas Buyers Club for Best Picture is one of the highlights of this year's nominee list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I it was one of my faves of the year, and it's had, I think, with the exception of Wolf of Wall Street, I think it's had the most criticism because a lot of people are like, well, we shouldn't have a AIDS movie where the protagonist is straight. Mm. And then there were some questions about, you know, his character and its look at the medical history at the time. Mm-hmm. But I think, to me, I think that's one of the reasons it works is because it emphasizes that this is a disease that affects everybody. And that includes, you know,
and the work that this man actually did when yeah. when he was still
yeah.
alive.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite of the year. I just thought this was has tremendous heart, and his character has a big arc, and he did lose the weight. And I think actors or the public and other actors like to see somebody really commit. I mean, he really committed to this. When you lose that much weight,
yeah.
You know, it can't be healthy. So I think he didn't make the movie, but obviously it was his role was you know, very important.
It also was never preachy. You know, it had a real attitude to it and it had a real edge to it. And that helped me get into it and really appreciate the characters and connect to the material because you hear that story and you just feel it's going to be this schmaltzy Hollywood treatment of it. And it wasn't that at all. And
no.
Probably because a Frenchman directed it. So
we've mentioned Jared Leto as being in this film. He plays the drag queen in this movie. And he's a Best Actor in a Supporting Role nominee for Dallas Buyers Club. The other nominees in that category are, I hope I say these names correctly, Barkhad Abdi for Captain Phillips, who I think this is his first role in the movies,
ever.
Which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Cooper in American Hustle, Michael Fassbender for 12 Years a Slave, and Jonah Hill in The Wolf of Wall Street. And again, you have all agreed on who the winner should be. May I have the envelope, please? And the winner is... The winner is...
Wait, who it should be? Because I doubt we agree
well,
on that.
Well, I think it's...
Maybe we said will win.
Will win.
Here's
will
the problem
win.
With okay. the Oscars by the time they come out on March 2nd. And someone actually said this to me last night. They said, didn't the Oscars happen already? And I said, no, they haven't. But 10 other shows have. And when you see the same face
that's
at
right.
every show, you start to assume that it's just going to be that person. And so far this year, it's been Jared Leto.
Yeah.
But he won the SAG Award. And actors are the largest block of voters in the Academy. So the people that they pick, the actors that they pick, probably have a good chance of winning.
Yeah.
But in this year, in that category, in almost all the categories, there are two or three that really deserve
yes,
to be in
there. Really
there.
Are. Anybody, you know, Michael Fassbender.
God, Fassbender is amazing.
Performance.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And if he loses, it's going to be disappointing. But.
And although all three of you said that you believe that Jared Leto will win, Matt, you would prefer Bradley Cooper to win because like a dog with a bone, you will not let American Hustle go.
Well, no, it's the Academy's fault because they didn't nominate John Goodman. They didn't nominate James Gandolfini.
Gandolfini should be
They
there.
Didn't nominate Daniel Brühl. All these actors I really like.
Yeah.
And if they were in there, but they're not. So by default, I mean, Jared Leto's fine, but it's one of those showboat performances. I think it's Matthew McConaughey's movie, not his.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Michael Fassbender is very good. I think he will give even greater performances in the future. Mm-hmm. He already gave one in Shame. So out of all these, I actually had a great time watching Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
He's usually plays smarmy characters, and I thought this was a great change of pace for him.
I'm angry that Gandolfini's not in the category.
Yeah, me too.
I'm actually angry.
Why would they do that, do you think?
I have no idea. They chose five
See,
others that they thought were
better. I disagree with you guys because I did not care for that movie at all.
Enough said,
yeah. I did not care for that movie. I didn't really care for the performances either. So,
really?
I feel bad that he died, believe me. But I just don't think it was Oscar worthy.
Anne Marie Oliva is with us from Arts a la Mode. She's the co-founder and the film theater review editor there. Matt Brunson from Creative Loafing. Sean O'Connell from WCNC-TV and CinemaBlend.com. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and North Carolina Dance Theater's Cinderella, a dreams come true fairy tale ballet for all ages. March 6th through 16th at Night Theater. Tickets at ncdance.org. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, it's 2 hours of Friday News Roundup. First in the 10 o'clock hour, it's the National News Roundup. A panel of journalists will join guest host Patty Kay to discuss the weekend news. A new Pentagon budget scales back to the Army to pre-World War II levels. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer vetoes a controversial anti-gay bill. And Representative John Dingell, the longest-serving member of Congress, announces his retirement. Those stories and more at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show here on 90.7 WFAE. And we'll get back to our Oscar show in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Rachel Martin, host of Weekend Edition Sundays, where we do not shy away from asking the big questions.
So the places where young women today can experience greater leadership typically are not within the Catholic Church.
Why is that?
So, I wish I knew.
Join me Sundays on Weekend Edition from NPR News and let the conversation begin.
Keep up with the news Saturday and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10. Weekend Edition on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with our trio of movie critics, Anne-Marie Oliva, Matt Brunson, and Sean O'Connell, and we're talking about the Oscars, which are Sunday night on ABC. Why is Gravity a Best Picture nominee? Is it on the basis of George Clooney and Sandra Bullock? It's two and only stars on the special effects. What's it all about, Alfie?
Well, I tell you what, after I saw it, I thought, there is no way I ever want to be in space. You know, it really gives you the feeling of being there. And I think probably Gravity is going to win a lot of the technical awards. Mm-hmm. It is just amazing. And I thought Sandra Bullock really went up another level, in my eyes anyway, in terms of her acting.
And this is your personal favorite, Sean.
It was my number one movie of the year. Nothing captivated me more in a theater this year than Gravity. And I actually went into it with huge expectations. I love the director. His name is Alfonso Cuarón. Mm-hmm. He did Children of Men. Mm-hmm. He did, to me, the best Harry Potter installment, Prisoner of Azkaban. He did E tu Mama Tambien. Just a great storyteller. And to see him playing around with this technology, with 3D, with IMAX, to immerse you in this experience of being in outer space, I went into it thinking that that was going to wow me. But boy, did I plug into the story. It's just a simple, you know, try to get from point A to point B, you know, story, but with a million obstacles in your way. And each one felt more and more exciting, more and more enthralling. And I mean, is it credible? No, of course not. But I mean, you go to the movies for escapism, and from the very first shot, which is this sweeping pan over the, you know, the planet, and it just hooked me and didn't let me go for the entire ride. So I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was great. I hope it wins Best Picture.
You want to chime in quickly?
I like it quite a bit. It didn't make my 10 best, but I thought it was a good technical achievement.
Best Actor nominees are Christian Bale in American Hustle, Bruce Dern in Nebraska, Leonardo DiCaprio in The Wolf of Wall Street, Chiwetel
Ejiofor.
Ejiofor. It's easy for you.
I might be wrong. That's what I think it is.
For 12 Years a Slave, he's the lead in that, obviously. And Matthew McConaughey for Dallas Buyers Club. You have a grizzled veteran in Bruce Dern competing against some younger heavyweights and a newcomer. Dern got Best Supporting Actor nomination in 1978 for Coming Home. Is there a chance that he will be awarded at long last for this, or is it just out of the question?
I wouldn't say out of the question, but I think this is a really strong category, except for Christian Bale, who has no chance. You can see Dern winning because, you know, he's the veteran, DiCaprio because he's overdue, and then the other two just because it's phenomenal performances.
And if Chiwetel
Ejiofor
won, he would be only the fifth black actor to win in that category ever. And given the subject matter of that film, could he be a surprise winner? I mean, it's a remarkable film.
It really is. And again, this is the part of, like, McConaughey has been at the head of the parade this mm-hmm. whole time. But the minute I came out of 12 years and even seeing it again, it is a remarkable performance.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
And if not for just the stars aligning for Matthew McConaughey, it feels like it would go to Ejiofor, who just is mind-blowing.
And yet, in spite of all this intelligent conversation we're having, I already know that we have a sweep in that category among you in terms of your choices of who should win and who will win. And the winner is...
a Matthew McConaughey.
Okay.
It feels that way.
Right.
Well, Hollywood loves a redemption story, first and foremost, off screen. And he's been viewed as this guy who's been wasting his talents for years upon years. And he made a – I think it was at the Screen Actors Guild. I can't even keep him track anymore. I think at the Screen Actors Guild, he apologized to his agent. And he said a couple of years back, he told them, it's not working. We have to completely change gears. And it's going to get dry for a while, but soon it's going to get wet. And right now it's wet.
Well, he's also he's also in True Detective on HBO, which in he's turning in a it's a great performance.
But this is what we're seeing from him now in all these films.
Well, you know, people can grow and actors can grow too. And I think he's really grown.
Write that down.
Yeah.
Well, and they can get stale
and
too.
And they can get stale too.
Yeah, sure.
But I think he's made a conscious effort to increase, you know, his I don't know.
Heft.
Yeah.
I pointed out that he and Jennifer Garner are in Dallas Buyers Club. And a few years back, they were in Ghost of Girlfriend's Past.
I know.
So clearly, they're just both choosing much better projects.
Now, although I have not yet seen Her, the Spike Jonze film starring Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams, and Scarlett Johansson, it's about a man who falls in love with his computer's operating system, which we all know to be completely false. That cannot happen.
As
because
I stare
everybody
at my BlackBerry.
hates their operating system. Are you kidding? Come on. But it seems like a small film for a Best Picture nominee. What brought this film to the table?
I think it's, you know, in the lineups these last few years, there's always that one kind of maverick pick. And I think for the Academy this year, it's Her. It's an original movie, obviously, very unique. I didn't love it quite as much as everybody else because I think it is a little chilly around the edges.
Chilly?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, it's certainly an upstanding movie.
It's very clever. And the thing I liked about it was
it's kind of sweet, too, from the clips that I've seen.
It's sweet, but it also it shows danger in the way we are isolating ourselves and not having as much human contact. And I think he took it to the end with that. And I thought it was very original and well done. And Joaquin Phoenix is terrific.
Mm. And once again, Sean, you've put this film in the no-shot category.
Which breaks my heart because it made my top 10. This is a film that I feel just came out of the gate too late. They released it the very end of December just to get consideration.
Yeah.
It still hasn't had as much push as a lot of these other films that have had a chance to contend. If Joaquin Phoenix had some more time, and if he was the kind of guy who went to the parties and glad-handed and did all that, he really doesn't care about any of that stuff, he should contend.
So when films like this get nominated, are they nominated because someone at the Academy really believes that in the movie, or is it a tip of the hat to someone politically?
A little bit of both. I mean, we had a controversy this year with a best song nominee that got in because the guy who was behind it had some pull in the Academy,
yeah.
to say the least. So, yes, there's always some politics behind it, and there's always a little bit of I'll help you.
Another Best Picture nominee that you have put in the no-shot category is...
Oh, I'm so rude.
You are. Nebraska. It's artsy. It's in black and white. It's got the aforementioned Bruce Dern. It's Alexander Payne directed. Why no shot? And why, if it's no shot, why is it in the list?
It has no shot for all the reasons you just mentioned. but people haven't embraced it. And it gets in because it's Alexander Payne.
Well, and it's a good movie.
It's a
very
movie.
Good movie.
Right, exactly. It's not a terrible movie
at all.
And
it fits the Academy's 70-year-old plus demographic.
Correct.
Perfectly.
But we keep going back to the fact that there are just more front runners this year. There are more films that can claim to say that they have a better shot at it. But it's not to say that Nebraska's a bad film. It's
you know, there's a big country out there, and I think a lot of people can identify with having somebody in their family like the Bruce Dern character. And it, as I mentioned before, it's kind of a downer.
Yeah.
But I think his performance, I mean, is very layered. It's hard to do those kind of performances without overdoing it. And I thought he just struck the right note as that character.
Best actress in a leading role, the nominees are Amy Adams in American Hustle, Kate Blanchett for Woody Allen's Blue Jasmine, Sandra Bullock in Gravity, Judi Dench for Philomena, and Meryl Streep in August, Osage County. Once again, by the way, she turns in a remarkable performance. There has been some fallout over Dylan Farrow's allegations that Woody Allen molested her as a child. He, of course, has denied that, but could that fallout have impact on Kate Blanchett's and her nomination, her chances for winning that award?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No.
Well, Meryl Streep, who gave a gripping performance in August Osage County, got shut out at the Golden Globes in favor of Amy Adams from American Hustle. It should have made you very happy. So the question is, what will happen? Will that happen again? And given your pick of the winners, I see the answer is no. Anne-Marie, you would like Cate Blanchett to win, but you haven't made a prediction on this category, so
well,
why
that
not?
Was that was a while ago.
Okay.
I she didn't win the BAFTA.
Yes.
And so I think I don't think they're going to hold her accountable for Woody Allen, nor should they. Her performance in this movie, I think the movie itself is overrated, but her performance is just astounding. I mean, you talk about building a character. And she has said Woody Allen really didn't direct her, except at the beginning he said, "You're awful." So she was kind of on her own. And
I mean, to me, that movie is
Streetcar Named Desire.
Thank you very much. And she's just playing the same role that would be played in that.
Well, she played it on Broadway,
I know.
I believe.
So
yeah.
How could she be horrible, and why is it such a great performance? It's right out of the Tennessee Williams playbook.
Because she is a totally unlikable character, yet.
As is Blanche DuBois.
But she makes you care.
Okay.
She makes you feel sympathy for this woman who really doesn't deserve much.
Well, it was in the flashbacks, I think, too, you know, where you got to see how she was being deceived but readily going along with it.
And there's one thing about film acting, which is, you know, we know how they're shot. They're shot out of sequence.
Right.
So when an actor does a character that's so consistent, especially one like this, it really is to be appreciated.
But can I also just chime in with Meryl Streep? Just Meryl, come on.
Oh, yeah, she was wonderful.
I mean, come on. I
she's amazing.
She was unbelievable
again
in that movie.
Yeah.
And I'm on the Blanchett bandwagon, and I think she's great in that movie. But when I saw August Osage County, I was just like, you got to be kidding me.
But
she's unbelievable.
You think Cate Blanchett's going to win?
Because I do think there is this Meryl Streep fatigue of every year, but she deserves it.
Yes, and you think Cate Blanchett's going to win?
I definitely think she's
and
great.
And you want Amy Adams to win because it's American Hustle.
Stop it!
But he does.
Can I throw something at you, please?
You do, don't you?
I do.
You?
I, do.
Does,
I think
does.
She was better in Man of Steel.
No, that would be absurd. No, I mean, it's hard for me because Cate Blanchett is amazing in that movie. As on the subject of Meryl Streep, yes, but I still think Julia Roberts is the one that steals that movie.
Amy Adams is the only one who hasn't won an Oscar in that category.
Mm.
So that –
that does help her. I mean, I think if anybody's going to upset Cate Blanchett, it's Amy
Although
Adams.
Although Margot – I can't think of her last name now.
Martindale.
I love her in everything she does.
Right.
Everything she does.
Another film that does – it's not in Best Picture.
No. Our next Best Picture nominee alphabetically is Philomena. It stars Judi Dench based on a true story. Pluses and minuses very quickly. Very quickly.
I've already forgotten its name.
You know,
okay. no pluses.
It just makes me mad at the Catholic Church again. So.
Okay. 12 Years a Slave won the Golden Globe for Best Picture. It is powerful. It is said that it was made largely through the efforts of Brad Pitt. Why was he so behind this film being made?
Because it's a great story to tell. And I think he saw all the pieces in place. Steve McQueen's an incredible director. They had a great cast. Some people are bothered by his little cameo at the end. And I could see why that would cause some controversy. But it didn't take me out of the film.
Yeah. No.
I want to throw in the nominees for Best Animated Film just to see if Frozen tops your list. Because everyone raves about this film as the best picture of the year in that category. And so which of the nominated films should win? Because Frozen didn't make it, did it? Did it make it?
Yeah.
It's
there.
All right. The Croods, Despicable Me 2, Ernest and Celestine, and The Wind Rises are the other nominees. Is this a walk away for Disney?
Yes.
Pretty much. I mean, The Wind Rises is supposed to be Miyazaki's last movie, so that'll have some sentimental value, but I think Frozen has it in the bag.
Best Director nominees are David O. Russell for American Hustle, Alfonso Cuarón for Gravity, Alexander Payne, Nebraska, Steve McQueen, not that one, the other one, for 12 Years a Slave, Martin Scorsese for The Wolf of Wall Street. And you are all, once again, unanimous in who you think
How
will
does it
win.
Happen?
I don't know. Collusion, I suppose.
You guys copy me too much.
Alfonso Cuarón for Gravity is what you all say. But, Amory, you'd like to see Steve McQueen win for 12 Years
I would.
A Slave.
I would like to see him. I you know, I wouldn't really quibble if Alfonso Cuarón won, but I just think 12 Years a Slave, you know, he does such an amazing job that I really would like to see him win it, but I think he's going to be just fine.
But you all picked Cuarón.
Well, it's such a technical
achievement. I also want Steve McQueen, and I think he should get it. And it could go either way.
Well, Cuarón won the Directors Guild Award.
Yeah,
you know, so.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens on Sunday night. We haven't talked yet about the final Best Picture nominee, The Wolf of Wall Street. What should be said about this film before we make a prediction on the winner in that?
Well,
I thought it was I might be in the minority again. I thought it was a swing and a miss for Scorsese.
To me, it's the weakest of the nine nominees, but it has a lot of followers.
It's made so much money, and people really dial into him and DiCaprio together as a team.
Yeah.
Since they've been working together, Scorsese's films have made more money and more money and more money. But this was a situation where he had to rush a cut into theaters to make it to be eligible for Best Picture, and it feels like there's a better movie in there somewhere. But who am I to say? Everyone's responding to it and really enjoying it.
It's controversial because you know, some people, when it first came out, some people said they're glorifying, you know, people like this. I think it's just the opposite. I mean, I felt like I was at a party where I hated every single person at the party. And I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I think it makes that point that these are horrible people, and they've cheated so many other people, and, you know, watch out for people that are smooth talk you. Again, hustling, watch out for people that are trying to hustle you.
Like it, though?
I wouldn't say like. I appreciated it. Yeah,
okay.
I appreciate it.
Well, let's get to the winner. The best picture nominees again are American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Nebraska, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street. Again, you are unanimous in your prediction of the winner.
12 Years a Slave.
Slave.
And it's kind of interesting that we're all doing that because, like, director and picture, like, hardly ever split at the Oscars. And yet all three of us are predicting a split.
And, of course, you want American Hustle to win. The British Academy of Film and Television Awards, the BAFTA, chose their Best Picture. And over the last 5 years, their choice of Best Picture has gone on to win the Oscar. Mm-hmm. And a few Sundays ago, they chose 12 Years a Slave.
Almost every group leading up to this, if they have a Best Picture kind of category, has gone with 12 Years a Slave. The Golden Globes did for drama. Screen Actors Guild went for it. It's racking up all of these. Do you have a list?
Well, no. I was just going to say it's made $48 million, but yeah. Gravity's made $267 million. So, you know, that kind of plays a part. I think they want to give Gravity something, but they really feel like 12 Years a Slave deserves
it. I have 20 seconds. When do the Oscar voters vote?
Between the 14th and the 26th of February.
So could they be influenced by the Golden Globes and the BAFTAs? Do they want to look foolish, or do they want to look like they're in lockstep?
Sometimes they want to go the opposite way.
Yeah. And with that, we have to end it. We'll see what happens on Sunday night at the Oscars on ABC. Sean O'Connell from WCNC-TV, Matt Brunson from Creative Wolfing, and Marie Oliva from Arts Alamo. Thanks all.